never filtered, always fun.
I don't think you can get food in this building anymore. Like, everyone talks about this food truck that people claim is here. I've never seen anything of the sorts. I'm not even joking. I don't think there's really a food truck.
It's unbelievable.
No one I've talked to has actually seen it.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Well, Pooley, this is where I'm supposed to come out of the gate and say, it's great to be back after 2 weeks. Is it?
It's great to have you back. How's that? Is that better than it's great to be back?
I think it's good to be back.
I feel like the regular here because I've been here a couple of times in the last couple of weeks with Scotty back.
I know. It's a Dave Poulin show. I feel like I'm kind of mowing your lawn here.
Right up to speed. We thought we were actually going to change seats today.
Did I miss anything?
No.
Because I try to check out.
No.
I try to check out. And this is the time of year, I guess, in the sporting world to check out. Although it's starting to pick up steam. The weekend was a fun weekend for sports.
Well, there was a lot going on, but you're supposed to check out when you're on vacation. Like when I went away for 8 days and people said, what did you do? And I said, nothing. And they said, well, that's no fun. And I said, but nothing is something. When you work at the pace we work at through the year, it's very important to do nothing at some point. But in the business we're in, there's a guilt involved with that because there's always something going on, and something might have happened in the last 2 weeks that may come up in November, and somebody looks at you and goes, well, remember in August when, and you're like, no, I don't remember in August.
That's what scares me.
Because I checked out for those 2 weeks.
Right. Like, I really try to get away and get out of it. Now,
it's healthy.
I think it is healthy. I think it's something every sports fan has to do, but I am such a big fan, I can't really totally get away.
But
you know, like I'm still
working.
Tracking, I'm still reading,
yeah,
I'm still interested.
And it's so much easier now with Twitter. And if you are following the right people on Twitter, and Bobby Mack described this to me one day, and it was an interesting way to look at it because I was slow coming to it. And he said when he was first sort of came upon it, he thought, well, this is a way essentially to design my own wire service. Used to follow the AP or the UPI or whatever it was, whatever wire service you followed. Well, now you could design your own. And that's basically what I've done with Twitter. I don't follow a lot of people, but I try and follow the right people. So if something happens, and you have to follow a couple of real life people too, like not just sports people. So if something happens in the real world, although the sports guys usually check in on major occurrences in the real world pretty quickly, but you have to get away from it. Think about when you're in the business and you want to get away on vacation and yet you know you can't let something go by.
But that's also the danger of Twitter because you can't actually truly get away because Twitter's always hanging around. It's always in your pocket. It's always sitting on the table. And it can go both ways because I'm not fully committed to actually getting away because I enjoy just watching sports and engaging in sports. And if I'm off for 2 weeks, I can approach it differently. You know, if I'm watching a Jays game 3 days into a two-week vacation, I'm not watching it in the same manner I will be watching a game tonight or I was watching games over the weekend because chances are 12 days down the road, whatever happened in that game is going to be off the radar.
Right.
But what Twitter, again, gives you the ability to do, like you just expressed, is tell you where you want to be, tell you what else is going on out there that maybe you're not tracking that you feel like you should be tracking. But it can also be kind of like that voice in the back of your head. You know, you're watching some show that you've gotten into with your wife, but you're like,
Ozarks?
Exactly. Whatever it is. I've been into Suits recently.
Like
we've been just humming through every season of Suits. Yet halfway through an episode, I'm like, okay, let me check out what's going on Twitter here. And I want to thank Twitter because it gave me the opportunity to watch not the whole match, but everyone's buzzing about, I'm going to screw this kid's name up 15 ways from Sunday, but Shapovalov. Dennis Shapovalov.
Nice job, by the way. That's
and
really good.
I wasn't committed to watching that match with Nadal. First and foremost, I didn't think it was going to be much of a match. I thought he'd just get smoked. I think most people thought that. But I'm on vacation. We were watching Suits, and I'm tracking Twitter, and it's like, you might want to go check this out. So I got over in time to catch, I wouldn't say a majority of the match, but a good portion of it, certainly the final few games of the final set. So I felt like I actually got to witness what will become a Canadian sports moment for the ages, or what did become a
and
Canadian
I did it
sports
the old
moment
fashioned,
for the ages.
Yeah, I did it the old-fashioned accidental way, coming back from a golf outing and bumped into Jimmy Ralph and sat at the bar to have a cocktail, and it was on. So that was kind of the old-fashioned way to bump into it.
Do you think you would have left? Let's say he was losing and he was about to lose 6-2, 6-1. You probably would not have even been paying attention to
him. No, you wouldn't have even
looked up. You would have just been talking to Ralph.
Might not have been on.
May not have been on.
Jay's game might have been on.
Might flip over to something else.
Yeah, they might have.
There's always something else on that the bar can supply you with.
Yeah, and it wasn't a sports bar, but you know, there were a couple of monitors, and that's what they had on at that time. And you know what? They probably had it on for the same reason that we did, because Twitter said put it on.
Right.
So it does let you follow what you choose to and want to, and it'll never let you miss something big in this day and age, but you can't be obsessed with it. You've got to put it down.
That's the problem, and I'll be the first to admit, I know I have an issue.
Like, you're a sports fan.
I'm way too connected to my phone. I'm way too connected to the sports world. I want to watch as much as I can watch, so it's like I'm forcing myself. It's like going to rehab for 2 weeks, like getting away from sports. It's like a sports rehab for 2 weeks, but it's open door policy.
But
and
as
I have
you
the ability
said,
to leave whenever I want.
You're watching it in a different manner. Like, you're not analyzing if Gibbons is going to be criticized for bringing in, you know,
not Osuna. The game 10 days ago, but over the weekend, probably a bit of a different story.
Yeah, but you're just watching. You're like, oh, he's bringing Osuna in. You know, that's unusual. Or, but they can't make a mistake, so he's going to bring him in. But you're not like, I wonder what I'm going to say about it tomorrow.
Well, one thing, another Twitter alert. Because I wasn't really watching the Jays game when Stroman got into it, and the Stroh show became a big story in the city again, and it feels like it pops up every three or four starts with him. Twitter was buzzing about what was going on with Stroman and how the Jays were dealing with it and how the fans and the broadcasters, et cetera. So that was another one where Twitter allowed me to kind of flip over and be like, all right, what's the buzz here? And that was one that I marked. Because I'm like, I want to come back and talk about that. Marcus Stroman is having an exceptional season.
Mm-hmm.
One of the very few bright spots on this team. Because over the course of 2 weeks, I was hoping things would change with the Jays. Realistically, they haven't.
I think it's a little better now than when you went away 2 weeks
ago. But here's what hasn't happened. Okay, they've chipped away at the number.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount of teams that they're ahead of and the amount of teams that they still have to hop over hasn't changed at all.
But they're in a better position now to do that, including this series. They can hop one themselves.
They are. But again, when I left, the only teams they were ahead of in the American League were Detroit, Chicago, and Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back 2 weeks later. The only teams they're ahead of in the American League are Detroit, Chicago, and Oakland.
But it's more compressed.
It is, but ultimately, you're still in the same situation.
Yeah, I'm so glass half full.
So you look at it differently. You look at the number and say, okay, they've chipped away at the number. But, and this is an easy glass half full, half empty argument. I guess I'll take the pessimist in this. But they still have to hop over all the same teams that they did 2 weeks ago.
They do, but if as a player, I feel way better about it now. Because now, at least three of those teams are saying, geez, the Jays have been awful, but they're starting to get it together. Donaldson's starting to jack here, and you know, and Hap is back and he's healthy. And you hated when a healthy, really good player came back late in the season because it was like they made a huge trade at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And now, if they get, you know, Travis back,
and he may end up being a guy who's in the cards, but I don't see it.
Do you get him back even in the pen?
Maybe. You know, again, it doesn't sound like he's really that close. I mean, I guess all I'm saying is they're running out guys. Two-thirds of their roster, or certainly two-fifths of the rotation, are guys who you're not aware of, you've never really heard of before. The rest of the league hasn't, and you got to give the league some time to watch the tape and potentially catch up to them. They're still in a very difficult spot.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
They're in a very difficult spot.
But it's
that
a better difficult spot than it was before you went
it
away.
It is. Listen, it's
better is difficult it, is a good way to put it.
Is it impossible? Of course not. Yeah. But they're running out of time with every single day.
Right.
And again, over the course of 2 weeks, chip away at the number, but you haven't leapfrogged one team, not even one team. Like, not one bully.
You
Detroit,
feel
Chicago,
about
Oakland.
You feel better about yourself, and other teams are watching you closer than they were.
Do you really feel better about yourself, though?
Yeah, you do. You're winning more games, just purely and simply. Just easier to go to ballpark when you're winning games. And they just won two series in a row for the first time in ages, and they feel better about themselves. Like, here's what they're saying. Can we actually salvage this? Like, as bad as we've been, can we actually pull a rabbit out of the hat here? And you know, about once every 3 or 4 years, somebody does this. Somebody makes a late run, and that's the reference. That's the veteran in the room saying, hey, we've been here before. We've done this. We can make a run. We can make a whole bad first 4 months go away right now.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying in the locker room.
That's, again, it's not improbable. It's not impossible. But
like, I've been on a team, Brian, where we were in last place in mid-December. And the reason I know it is because we picked somebody up on waivers because we had the first shot at picking them up. As soon as it flipped from last year's end-of-season standings to the current standings this year, we had the first shot at picking somebody up on waivers. But we'd been there before.
Different league, though, too. Different playoff structure. It is,
and earlier in the season, too, halfway through the year. But we went right to the top of the division that year. Because we'd been there before, we'd done it before, and we said, okay, we've been awful. You can't explain how bad we'd been on every facet, but we still have the capacity to change that this year. And a player and an athlete does feel better about himself when he does that.
Yeah, see, I've always wondered that, how athletes, you know, it's one thing to say the right thing. Most athletes will say the right thing.
Durham 101.
Yeah, if you go into that clubhouse right now with a microphone and say, okay, guys, we're on the record. I'm going to ask all of you, do you believe you can still make the playoffs? Mm-hmm. I would assume every player would say yes. Mm-hmm. Do I believe every player actually believes that? Not a chance. Not a chance.
Well, I would agree with that, too. But as long as
you just need a majority.
Yeah, that's what you need.
You need a majority. So what if the minority are the movers and shakers?
The majority.
Like, what if the minority who doesn't believe it is Donaldson, Stroman, Osuna, like the guys who are actually going to carry the mail for the team? Like, doesn't that matter?
Well,
like, let's say, use hockey as an example. You put yourself back in that room.
They have the most to lose.
Right. But if they don't believe it, then what does it matter if the third and fourth line and the third pairing and the backup goalie believe it?
Yeah.
What does it matter?
I was a player who always thought he could win. I didn't care
what. But you have that viewpoint on life. You're a different cat.
Why wouldn't I?
You're always in a good mood. You look at things glass half full.
I'm not always in a good mood, but I do make a decision every morning that I'm going to be in a good mood. I make that decision.
So you wake up and you have like an internal battle with yourself, and happiness and good times always win.
I have a little blue sign. It says, attitude is everything. I used to tell my teams, you don't get to pick your height. You don't get to pick a lot of different things. You might not get to pick your foot speed. You don't get to pick your slap shot. You get to pick your attitude. It's one of the few things in life you get to choose every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning you wake up and you get to choose your attitude.
See, I admire that. I admire your general attitude and the way that you approach
life. I don't think it was always like that. I think it was a decision at some point, but it was pretty early in my life that I decided that. I decided no one else was going to do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't decide every day that I was going to have a good day, it wasn't happening.
Well, it's worked out for you really well.
Well, it has. I mean, you laugh at, you know, a late bloomer. I see this kid, Chris Rowley, come up, you know, at his age, is 27 years old, playing first major league game. I was 24 when I made it.
Mm-hmm. You know, but you didn't go to West Point and serve in the military.
I did not go to West Point.
You did not make that decision.
I did not.
You didn't wake up one day looking at that sign and saying, I'm going into the military here.
First Major League Baseball player ever to come out of the military academies.
He got an incredible ovation coming off the mound. Do you think that was because the crowd understood his story?
Or just knew
that he was a guy they didn't know of and he pitched really well?
Here's why I don't think they know it. Because when it happened, I looked him up immediately. That was Saturday. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Saturday.
Yep.
Between Saturday and today, he now has a Wiki page.
Now it's a big
story. He did not have a Wikipedia page on Saturday.
Is that right?
He now has a Wikipedia page.
Well, it's a great story. First ball player in history to graduate from West Point.
First Major League Baseball player.
First Major League ball player, go to West Point, mm-hmm. and eventually get to the pros.
So there's a little wrinkle here, depending on the academy. When you are accepted into, you get an appointment to an academy, you're fully paid. It's a full paid scholarship. So when you say, you know, I've applied to the Naval Academy, you have to get a senator to back you, a local senator, state senator, you have to, it's all this process. First of all, you have to be an absolute straight A student. Like the Naval Academy, everybody's an engineer going to the Naval Academy. Everybody. There's not a floater taking like basket weaving over there in the corner. Everybody's an engineer. So once you go 4 years to the academy, you have to give either, depending on the academy, either 4 or 5 years back of full service. So it doesn't lead itself to being an athlete. And there are some unbelievable exceptions. Like Roger Staubach, the great Dallas Cowboy quarterback, came out of the Naval Academy, 5 years later played his first game for the Dallas Cowboys. David Robinson, maybe the most
prominent.
Highly prominent, number one overall pick in the NBA draft.
Hall of Fame career.
He couldn't play for 2 years. And now 2 years on full duty, and then 2 years on Naval Reserve, and if you're a high-profile exemption. And that's where you get, you know, the benefit of maybe doing it. Napoleon McCallum was another one, the running back.
Like, this is...
It's a cool story.
It's very cool. I wonder, in a way, if it's wasted because he's on the only Canadian team.
Well, it's interesting.
Like, it's just such an American story.
But he made a point of saying the only team that would take a chance on me was the Canadian team.
Exactly.
Like, that's the sense.
And credit to the Jays, because this isn't a charity. I mean, they're not letting him pitch because of his story. They're having him pitch partially because of the position they're in,
but also
because they believe he could supply them with production. That's what he did over the weekend. But like West Point, with everything that's going on in that country, and it's a weird, dark time. It's a really difficult,
strange
time.
And eerie vibe as I've experienced.
Right, and you got a long history with the States. You worked and
lived
down
there
for a long
years.
Time. Your daughters are all Americans.
They are.
I believe they still live down there, right?
They all do. Yeah.
So you're very connected.
Totally invested. Yeah.
West Point, though, is still as prestigious of an institution as it gets.
Well, as is the Naval Academy, as is the Air Force Academy,
right
in Colorado Springs. And
he went there, and now he's made it, the first guy ever to do it. And people in Toronto, how many people in Toronto, I don't know, how many people know of West Point, know of the history, know of the obligations that come with it, the ones that you just detailed, if you
huge
actually,
obligations.
You know, I don't know. Where if he was in New York, like a pitcher for the Yankees or the Mets,
it'd be a big deal. Be a huge, huge story.
But I don't blame, like, it's not on the media to make this a bigger story. It's not our academy. It's not our military.
It's an interesting question for Dirk Hayhurst when he's on today. And that is the low mileage on Chris Rowley as a 27-year-old. Like, he hasn't pitched his way up through the minors. He's played, you know, I don't know, 32 college baseball games a year for 4 years. And then when he was on assignment, he threw to his buddy in the gym or out in the field.
You would think that arm's got a lot
that
of gas
arm,
left
and
in
he
it.
Has actually increased his miles per hour recently, you know, as he's pitched more at the professional ranks. So he was in Class A ball last year. He's played 2 years of pro ball.
It's a great story. And he pitched really well.
But, you know, it's funny.
They won the game.
Scotty Mack and I had this philosophical discussion, which you and I have touched on today, about whether the Jays could do it. And he's like, you can't tell me that. And I said to him, something strange has to happen. Okay, Hap has to come back and be really good. Stroman has to win every game he pitches for the rest of the year. Guys have to get on track that haven't been. But then there has to be some other really, really good story. Now, I didn't know. I don't think Chris Rowley had been called up at that point. But this is the kind of thing. Like, if this kid goes 6-0 the rest of the year,
it'd be one hell of a
7-1.
So
that's what gets you into the playoffs. Crazy stuff like that.
Well, and that's what they need. When you're this far into the season, you've had this many injuries, you've made some trades, you need unsung heroes to step up for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Justin Smoke has done it all year for you. He's gone above and beyond this
he is the real
short stint. I mean, this guy's season has been spectacular. It's been a lifesaver for them. Without him, they're way out.
Yes.
You know, but the reverse hypothetical, you pointed this out, Donaldson over the past couple of weeks looks like he's the bringer of rain again.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like he's a legitimate top five player in the American League. Sanchez, I don't think we can expect anything from him. But coming into the season, the hope was he would be a top five Cy Young.
But Happ is the real, real key to this, too.
Well, there's, I mean, listen, they need everything. Let's be honest.
They
put themselves in this position. They need everything plus luck, plus the other teams to all stumble collectively. I mean, I'm not sitting here preaching what I hear some people preaching, that they're in it or that it's even at all possible. But it's better than the alternative. It's better than where the White Sox are or Oakland or whatever, where they're out of it, it's done. Detroit, it's done. Four games out, you can sell yourself on, okay, they win 5, 6, 7 in a row, then maybe they're two out, whatever.
And this team has done that the last couple of years. They've had those streak.
As for Stroman, though, as I was saying, with the Stro show and everyone having a take on how they feel about his antics on the field, one thing I was wondering, and I don't know why this applies to him, but it's been brought up a lot over the past couple of years with him. Since when do we, and by we I mean collectively the fan base and the media, care about how other teams or how other players on other teams feel about your player?
I think it's great that they're all mad.
So do I. But I'm sure you've heard this point.
Oh, I have.
It's where it comes up all the time. All these other teams are going to, they hate him and they're going to get after him. Who cares if they hate him? Like, why? Maybe it's a baseball thing. Like, in hockey, this is not only supported, this is
a badge of honor.
Oh, absolutely. You're an agitator. You're a pain in the ass. You're a guy who the other teams hate. This is something that is going to put you on the map as a player. This is something that can keep you in a league. Keep you in the league. Football, the same kind of thing. Basketball with, you know, smack talk, and it's more aggressive, it's more physical. There's actual contact between players. It is promoted, and it is encouraged. Maybe not across the board, but if you're known as a guy in the NBA who other teams hate, I think for the most part, awesome. You become a fan favorite. Charles Oakley, the best example.
Dennis Rodman.
There's a long list of them. Why does anyone care if Stroman's hated by other teams?
I don't know.
Why?
He does not. Maybe he's not the normal profile of a hated player. I mean, he came out of Duke, one of the most prestigious universities. I mean, think of some of the guys I played with, Brian. Think my first roommate in the pros was Bobby Clark.
Hated.
How do you think he was going into other buildings?
Hated.
Like, hated.
But in Philly, loved.
Revered.
For that, too.
Revered.
Now, he's a great player anyway, captain, Hall of Famer, cups and all that.
Right.
But in Philly, that puts him even above and beyond.
Three-time MVP in the National Hockey League. And in a pure race, you could beat him going backwards. He had one of the worst shots I've ever seen in the NHL.
Mm.
He used to hit the ice behind the puck to try and trick the goalie before he shot it. That's honest to God.
It probably worked.
But you think of, in this town, Darcy Tucker. You think of a guy who the other teams and other players love to hate. And what did Leafs fans think of Darcy Tucker? They loved him. And yet this little, what Stroman has going on right now is pretty interesting. I'm surprised more pitchers don't do it, actually. He's doing anything to unnerve and break the rotation of the other
player. Well, he's changing
the
up
other player.
His,
the leg delay is crazy.
He's
really crazy.
And that's something new. Like, that's something that he continues to add. He continues to add pitches. He continues to mess around with his own form. And
it's like, from a cerebral standpoint, he's trying to outthink them, including out-talent them as a pitcher.
Well, and I might grant, and I'm not saying that every fan thinks this way. I think the majority of fans love Stroman, and furthermore, they look at his stats and his numbers. But there are
vibe.
You do get the sense like there's like some concern that he's going to do something that's going to lead to some, I don't know, some big blow up, or it's going to ruin or tarnish the reputation of the Jays.
Maybe that's the catalyst the team needs.
But that's like a
bat flip in a playoff game?
And listen, I might be able to grant you he walks the walk but doesn't, or he talks the talk but doesn't walk the walk, if his stats were bloated, if he wasn't performing. He's got a 3 ERA. If he continues at this pace, he's going to be under a 3.0. Like, this guy is a legitimate top 5, top 7 arm in the American League right now, at least in the American League East. It's not going to be up for Cy Young. It's going to be Sale, maybe Kluber. I think Sale, especially after the way he pitched again last night at Yankee Stadium, is more than likely going to run away with it. But the guy's numbers have been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So, talks the talk, walks the walk. And this idea that the way he performs, his personality, his persona, the emotion that he portrays on the mound is somehow going to be an issue because maybe the media doesn't like it, or some media members don't like it, or some fans don't like it. Again, to me, is completely irrelevant. The only thing that matters in a situation like this, when you've got a guy who is a little bit different, mm-hmm. he's not your prototypical athlete who goes out there and just performs and puts his head down and walks away, the conventional athlete, whichever way you want to define that. The only thing that matters is how his teammates feel.
Is it because he calls too much attention to himself? Like, is this the PK Subban argument?
But he's on the mound. He only plays 33 times a year, yeah. you know? And he is on his own.
Mm-hmm. It's an individual position.
It is. This is not, like, yeah, he's a part of a team, of course. It's a 20, you know, it's a 40-man roster, a 25-man roster.
You could argue it's the most individual position in sport.
Without question. In terms of the team sport.
In terms of a team sport.
Component. Yeah, without question. He is out there on his own. If you pitch a perfect game, you don't need anyone other than the catcher to catch the ball and throw it back to you.
And the umpire could do that for you.
And the ump could do it if need be. If you're performing, you don't need anybody.
That's really an interesting way to look at it.
You can literally be up there and
win a game
almost on your own. But when it comes to any of these bigger-than-life personalities, who cares if some media members are like, I don't like him, or he's different when the cameras are off, or if fans are kind of not feeling the way he's performing or his persona and all that. The only time it ever will be an issue is if his teammates decide don't like it.
Yeah, we'll go right back to Al Davis and the Oakland Raiders. Just win, baby.
And that's what he's doing. The team isn't doing great.
Okay, would the perception be different if the team were winning?
I don't know. I don't think so because...
I think it would. We didn't hear this over the last couple of years. Of course, he was hurt. And
that's the thing. He's had some injury problems, and we heard it at times. Mm-hmm. And last year, he underperformed. You know, the team was doing well, but his numbers weren't that great. Right. He got better as the season went on. But I just don't see
this
being...
If this is going to be the result of his performance, and he has to be like that to perform like this, then I'm fine.
Go for it. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, I talk about bandwidth and a player playing in an upper... You know, was that Ron Hextall? If he was in that upper bandwidth, if he was below it, he wasn't good enough. If he was above it, he was out of control. If he's in that bandwidth and he's pitching like Marcus Stroman is.
And if everyone else on the team is like, hey, that's him, we love him, mm-hmm. who cares?
Just win, baby.
Who cares? Go out there and do your thing. We got to get into what happened at the Rogers Cup.
Absolutely.
And specifically late last week, Denis Shapovalov beating Rafa Nadal. I would argue any young player on tour beating one of the big three, and specifically one of the original big two, Federer or Nadal, is way bigger than actually winning a tournament without having to go through them.
Yeah, so if he goes to the finals even on the other side and
doesn't face any of them, this is way bigger. We'll touch on that next. All right, Mark Masters will join us here in a moment. He's been on the tennis beat all summer. He's been doing this for years. He covers the Leafs on a daily basis. And then when the Leafs are out, he's got a great gig. He goes to the French Open, so he hops the pond, goes to Paris. Then he's at Wimbledon. Then he's covering the Rogers Cup. Generally, I believe he gets to the U.S. Open. How's that for every summer? Okay, you travel with the Leafs, and that can be a grind. And when they were brutal, it was a real grind. You experienced some of that grind yourself.
I was on a lot of those airplanes.
You were on a lot of those birds. But you wrap up a season with the Leafs. This past year was obviously a lot of fun. And then you go Paris, London, New York.
Yeah, with a Montreal stop in between.
Not bad.
Yeah.
That'll work.
So Montreal's like his kick back and get back on track city. That's the lowest key of those cities.
Back in the country, yeah, we're going to just relax. Not much of a party town. Not much going on here.
Going to relax on Bishop.
It's not going to happen. But we're going to throw him a curveball. He thinks he's coming on to talk tennis. We're just going to ask him about the Marchenko waving story. Because for any Leaf fan out there that cares, or anybody on earth, Alex Marchenko was waived for some reason by the Maple Leafs today.
Because Shapovalov.
We'll get this right.
Shapovalov.
So we'll see what Masters has to say about Marchenko being waived. We'll get to that in 2 minutes. All right, Logan Couture will join us in about an hour. Get his take on when he heard the news Patrick Marleau was leaving the Sharks and signing with the Leafs. What was running through his mind?
There goes my left wing.
I mean, Couture's been there his whole career, but
yes.
Marleau was there for like 12 years before he even showed up.
It's amazing. He had a career before Couture got there. And I love how Logan talks now, like he's 27, 28 years old. Talks about young guys like they're nine generations behind him. It's beautiful.
Right.
And these young guys are really fast.
10 years older than him. All right, so it was a big week and a half for Canadian tennis. Let's bring in our main man. He was covering the Rogers Cup. He's now on vacation. He's been to Paris, London, Montreal. He's going to New York, I believe, in September for the U.S. Open.
So he's squeezing a vacation into those, because none of those cities are vacation-like.
I guess it's all work all the time. Here's Mark Masters. What's up, Mark?
I'm doing well. Good to be back on the program. In this business, it never seems to stop, but I always enjoy coming on with you guys.
So your take on Marchenko being waived today by the Leafs?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, it kind of makes sense, KHL, and create a little more cap flexibility for the Leafs, I suppose. I mean, on the other end, it does raise an eyebrow just because when they signed him, when they picked him up, they said, we like that we can control him for more than just the season. So a bit eyebrow-raising, but I'm sure it's all in the Shanna plan.
I love the fact that Hayes just threw you that curveball and you didn't even blink, Mark.
You realize no one really cares, right, Mark? Like, that's not why we had you on.
You didn't even blink.
Right into all business all the time. Like, yeah, interesting with the KHL angle. I like that.
That is brilliant.
We'll make sure SportsCenter gets a hold of that clip.
Yeah,
no one really cares about Marchenko, I don't think.
You thought we were going to talk about some young Canadian tennis hotshot.
Yeah, I mean, this Dennis Shapovalov kid, who was not necessarily unknown. I mean, he's only 18, but in terms of...
He's had some profile.
But we were talking about this a little bit just prior to having you on, Mark. Like, with the way the world of tennis works and the way it's worked for essentially the past 15 years, you have to be one of the big three to truly get your name on the map. And maybe even more so Nadal and or Federer. And I would argue him beating Nadal is way bigger than him actually winning the tournament without going through one of those two guys. Like, if they were on the other side of the bracket and they lost early and somehow he still won the tournament but didn't beat Nadal or didn't beat Federer, I don't think it would be as big of a story as him winning the way he did, and then losing in the semis. It was almost like, who cares what he does the rest of the tournament? What was your take on the whole situation?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, Rafa Nadal is going to be the world number one a week today. We know that now, with Roger Federer withdrawing from Cincinnati with the back injury. We know Rafa Nadal is going to be... He just beat the guy who's going to be number one in the world, and he came from behind to do it, and he was down 3-love in the third set. I mean, the way he did it, the whole thing was amazing, but you're right. You beat one of the all-time legends of the game, a guy who's won a Grand Slam earlier in the summer, and you just kind of stare him down and play the big moments better. For sure, that to me was more than anything else he could have done that week. He could have lost the next match, and it would have been, you know, a great week and a great moment. I was just trying to figure out where it ranks in terms of the great tennis moments for Canada. Because, you know, Raonic beating Federer in center court has to be up there. Jeannie Bouchard had a breakthrough in at the Australian Open against Anna Ivanovic in the quarterfinals when she was starting that amazing 2014. Nestor beat a world number one Edberg back in 92 at the Davis Cup. There's been some big moments, but just the electricity of that home crowd and the way he did it. Yeah, I'm with you. That Nadal match, that's something that's going to stick with me. I wasn't in the building for that. I was still in the Toronto side of things at that point, but you could feel it. You could feel that something special was happening watching that match. And yeah, that to me was the takeaway from the event.
Have you been around him enough to really sense the makeup of this kid? And we were all drawn to our TVs at some point on Friday night, be it Thursday night, 9 o'clock, 9:30, whatever it was, we all seemed to get to our TVs around the same time to watch that. Whether we'd started watching it or not, we were drawn to our TVs. Can you talk about the makeup of him? Do you know him? Have you been around him enough?
Yeah, I mean, we followed him a bunch in the juniors. He won the junior U.S. Open doubles with his best bud who he was rooming with, staying in his basement, Felix Auger-Aliassime. And a lot of people think Felix Auger-Aliassime is a better prospect than Dennis, which is really heartening for Canadian tennis fans. He's got an injury right now, a left wrist injury. Otherwise, he would have been making his ATP main draw debut at the Rogers Cup this year. He's going to be in U.S. Open qualifying, they hope, in a couple weeks' time. So I got a chance to interview him there. He won Junior Wimbledon, of course, on the same day that Milos Raonic played in the Wimbledon finals against Andy Murray. So it got a bit overshadowed, but that was a big deal for him. I got to actually have a little, do a fun feature with him last summer, play a few points with him at the venue at York University, and he's got a great personality. This kid's, you know, he gets it, I think. I think he understands what it takes, and he's very kind of at home on the court. And I enjoyed talking to him. So I think he's kind of shown that. It's pretty incredible. Think about how his season started in February at the Davis Cup. Super Bowl Sunday, he's playing the deciding match of the Davis Cup against Great Britain and against Kyle Edmund, and he has a moment of just anger and frustration, hits the ball, accidentally hits the umpire, is forfeited the match, gets fined. A lot of people are wondering if it's going to derail him. And it turned out it was a rallying point for him. He learned from it. And the way he channeled his emotions during the last week in winning so many matches, coming back from match points down in his first round, it just shows how mature he is. And I think he's a special kid. And Patrick McEnroe, who I was talking to yesterday, was saying, you know, he loves the mental makeup, and he's just wondering, his size is the big question for him, because he plays such a, the way he described it, as a swashbuckling style. You just wonder if his body will be able to keep up with that. So we'll see. But I've been impressed with just his mental makeup so far in the time that I have been able to share with him.
And that is so much of being an individual athlete, be it golf or tennis, is the mental side of it. But the swashbuckling style and the risk you're taking with your body is part of that mental makeup, and that's part of his success so far.
100%. And actually, it's interesting. Alexander Zverev, who a lot of people think is going to be a world number one sooner rather than later, just 20 years old, said one of the takeaways from playing Shapovalov a couple days ago in the semis, and he won, but it was a tight match, that Dennis moved better than he thought he would. He knew he had the big forehand, the serve is crafty, he's got this beautiful one-handed backhand that could still develop into a bigger weapon for him. But he was surprised that at such a young age, the way he moved around the court, very efficient. So if he can keep that going for him, that will be a big thing. And, you know, obviously we've seen how injuries have derailed Milos Raonic time and time again. Look at what's happening on the men's tour right now. And Kei Nishikori withdrew today from Cincinnati. Gael Monfils withdrew. Already Murray isn't playing. Stan Wawrinka's out. Djokovic has shut things down. It can be a big wear and tear, this sport. And you've got to have a great physio. You've got to have a great workout regimen. And I think he understands that. And it's just a question of whether or not he'll be able to grow big enough to kind of sustain long periods of play.
With Mark Masters, who was covering the Rogers Cup for TSN. I'm reluctant to say that the Milos and Genie era has already passed us by, but I'm getting to a point where I wouldn't be shocked if that was the case, which really is amazing considering where we were just 2 years ago, where we were just getting into a new era of Canadian tennis that had the feeling of potentially being something very, very special. And that's where Shapovalov coming in, especially considering it was a perfect storm. It was prime time against Nadal at the Rogers Cup. It's like a made for movie script. But I also think there's a part of the Canadian tennis fan, or just the Canadian sporting community here, Mark, that is wondering if it's time to already start looking for that next young player. Like, are you close to moving past Raonic and Genie in terms of expecting them to get back to slam semis and potentially finals in the future?
Yeah, it's not looking great for either of those two right now. I mean, two completely different things. I mean, Raonic, I think with that big serve, and if he's healthy, Wimbledon, he'll be a factor for a number of more years to come here for sure. Other events will be tough. The problem for him is the big four are still a factor, even with Djokovic out, Murray on the hobble. You still got, I assume, the Sack thing won't keep Federer out of the U.S. Open, and then you got Nadal. And then the problem he's going to face is this next, even even, you know, not counting the other Canadian kids coming up, but Dominic Thiem, young Austrian, is looking good. Zverev's won 2 Masters 1000 events this year. Milos has never won one. Kei Nishikori's never won one. Grigor Dimitrov, that's kind of seen as the lost generation of kind of this era of tennis. They haven't been able to push the big guys. So Raonic is in a tough spot. He's clinging to the top 10 right now. I think if he can stay healthy, get back, get some confidence back, I'm not sure it's going to happen at the U.S. Open this year, but I think he can still be a factor at Wimbledon and at certain other events. Jeannie, she's 23. She's still so young. It seems like she's been around forever, but she's completely, her game is almost disintegrated. It's crazy mentally how she's gone from being considered this rising star who didn't get, was unflappable, to now if something goes wrong on court and she just kind of falls apart. So we'll see where she goes, if there'll be a moment of truth or something that will turn her around. I still think she's got enough years to do it, and I think women's tennis is unsettled enough where you got like 5 or 6, 7 players that still think they could end the year number one right now, that there is an opening there. But we'll see. There's a very good Canadian women's prospect, Bianca Andreescu, who played a match at the Rogers Cup this year, made her WTA home debut. She just beat Kristina Mladenovic in Washington, becoming the first player born in the 21st century to beat a top 20 player. So she's a legit prospect, and the Canadian Tennis Canada officials really think she has what it takes to win a Grand Slam. So she's coming too. So we'll see. Both Jeannie and Milos are getting pushed.
Thank you, Mark. Always appreciate it, buddy.
Well, no more Marchenko talk?
We'll get at that maybe next week. Some hot takes on the Marchenko waving.
I was talking to Josh Levo at the Kadri Golf Tournament last week, so I got lots of things to tell you.
All right, buddy. We're looking forward to it. Right around the corner.
All right. Thanks, guys.
There's Mark Masters. And
world
the thing
traveler.
Is, he's such a great guy, and he knows his tennis, man. He's on top of the Leafs beat. I mean, the fact that he's even vacationing is kind of a shock.
The way he jumped right into that was perfect, though.
Just all business. Like, I was totally goofing on him. I'm like, who cares about Marchenko? Like, the guy barely played. No one thought he was going to make the team or be a factor. It's August 14th or whatever.
It was back to when they picked him up. And
it's right on it. But Shapovalov, he's only 18. I mean, we got to remember that.
Just for a second, but
you got to slow down a little bit.
You're knocking the name out, though. You're doing.
I'm trying to.
Yeah, you're doing a good job with it.
All right, Logan Couture around 5:30. Alex Marvez, tons of NFL news. We'll get into the Ezekiel Elliott story and some more news on that in terms of Goodell and how big of a role he really played leading up to the suspension.
This, Brian, a lot
lots of layers. So we'll tell you more about that and get back into the Jays. Dirk Hayhurst later in the afternoon. Dave Pullen's in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.
It's time for a Sweet 16 battle in TSN 1050's Sound Wars.
Oh, what a hit that was!
This is the worst one for sure.
All right, Pooley, I've been missing out on this, but I've been tracking it online.
Sound Wars. Living your life. That's what we're doing.
A lot of them are from Overdrive shows over the past year and a half.
Absolutely.
All right, so I've got to announce a winner from today's Sound Wars battle between, can't believe this one didn't win, I Have to Crap. That just screams radio integrity, doesn't it?
Screams O-Dog.
Yeah, it was O-Dog. And Snoop, it's Jerry. The winner of today's Sound War was...
You know who's back up in this mother...
Snoop, it's Jerry. G-E-R-R-Y. Thanks for ruining the weekend at the All-Star Game. All I heard was this and that. It's Jerry. Call me.
Jerry was not happy with Snoop. That's one of my favorites, though. Snoop, uncensored. Anything that could have gone wrong.
They're just trying to get you ready for O-Dog coming back in
right,
September.
Right, exactly.
That's what this is about.
All right, so the best sound bites are down to the Sweet 16, and you get to decide which one survives. This TSN 1050 Sound War brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager. It's soundbite seed number 4 versus seed number 5. All right, let's hear seed number 4.
And he's going to get hit. And they're going to throw Gausman out of the game.
It's a curveball.
He has been thrown out.
I mean, you can't be that clueless. I mean, he threw a breaking ball into Bogart's back. I mean, everybody that watches, you know, anybody that knows baseball, that he's not trying to throw at him. That's ridiculous. I mean, have an idea.
Have an idea by the Eck. I love that. Eckersley bringing the heat like he always does. All right, soundbite number 5.
Here's Matthews with Nylander, 2-on-1. Back to Matthews. He scores! Austin Matthews, four goals. Do you believe this? Holy mackerel, the kid's on fire.
Ooh, that's tough, man. I would probably have to vote Matthews. We were both in the building for that one.
We were watching.
That's as good as it gets. They lost that game. They could have used that point at the end of the year. Go to TSN1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite soundbite. Seed number 4, Have an Idea, or seed number 5, Matthews, the fourth goal of opening night. Voting for this Sound War closes tomorrow at 8 a.m. Listen to Naylor and Landsberg in the morning for the results and for the start of a new Sound Wars battle on TSN 1050. Sound Wars is brought to you by our friends at Old Tomorrow and Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager at select Loblaws grocery stores, available now. All right, Pooley, hour two coming up. Logan Couture will join us at 5:30. We'll get back in the Jays and touch on what's going on in the NFL and specifically this Ezekiel Elliott story.
Yeah,
more and more layers coming out by the day.
There's a lot going on here.
We'll touch on that next.